of course, we had met and decided to do the Hare Krishna mantra. It was going to be the record that we made. But we'd never prepared. I remember George and Mukunda sitting down at a piano. Mukunda sat at the piano, and we worked out a melody and a basic structure for the 3 minutes. George told us we had 3 minutes and 30 seconds to do this, so we had to time it to begin and end in 3 minutes and 30 seconds. There are some photographs even of Mukunda sitting at the piano while George and he worked out the patterns.
But this didn't happen right away. We set out some madrasas and set out Prashadam and little Saraswati, and we were just like having a picnic. And I remember George at one point said, "This is costing £45 an hour, so let's get started."
45 pounds? 45,000.
45,000 pounds.
Some huge amount.
Anyway.
Anyway, yeah. We were in our usual style. We're very relaxed about it. George became the professional.
Yeah.
This is the first time we saw George as a professional. And he sat us down and we got all the sound checks, you know, the microphones set up. And Jamuna had the best voice of us, so she was going to, and Mukunda. We started out that Mukunda would sing first, and then it sounded too thin with one voice. So then Mukunda and Jamuna sang together, the lead. But Mukunda was the only one of us that knew how to play the mridanga, and if he played the mridanga and sang, the drum was too loud. So then George said, "Well, Shyam Sundar, you try it." So Jamuna and I sang the lead with her predominating, and I just kind of weaved in a little bit. Malati was playing kartals. Gurdas was playing kartals.
No, I wasn't playing kartals because I was like, first of all, I can't keep any rhythm. And I was basically keeping, you know, Saraswati out of the way. And actually, that's how the gong ended up, because kirtan is wonderful, and we kept repeating, but, you know, every time we do this little take, he'd listen, and then, now we have to do it again. So it actually began to be quite lengthy. And at one point, again, we had to do it, and at that end of that particular take, something just possessed me to pick up this stick, and there was a large gong. And I hit the gong, and everybody just turned around and looked at me like a person from hell, because, you know, they thought I had spoiled the whole thing. And I was shocked myself, because I hadn't, you know, planned on doing this. It just kind of happened. And, you know, we had tried, we'd thought, at last we have the perfect take, and then I just smashed it with the gong. Well, then George listened to this particular take, and he became very excited. He said, that's it. And when he played it back, he kept the gong in there. So that's that gong you hear at the end. And Shyam Sundar was also playing the esraj, which is a stringed instrument.
Yeah, well, we were preparing for this for some time. You know, we thought this would attract the Beatles if we could play instruments. So I used to play violin as a child, so I got an Indian esraj and learned how to play it, but very simply.
You learned the mantra. Basically.
Yeah, I knew how to play Hare Krishna mantra on the esraj. That's about it. But anyway, so we had our little music group, and I remember George moving the kartals further back. Pretty soon you guys were almost out the door with the kartals, because they took over the sound.
Right.
And then all the assistants, Apple people, started coming, drifting in, and they became the chorus.
Mal Evans. Well, we also recorded over ourselves.
Yeah.
That was
about 6 or 8 takes, and finally that was it.
Yeah.
But this record, from this very small event, in this one evening in London, this record went out. It was released a few weeks later. It completely revolutionized the Hare Krishna movement, especially in Europe.
Became number 3 in Czechoslovakia.
Suddenly, everyone in the British Isles knew the words Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
They heard it on the radio. They saw it on Top of the Pops on television, which was the most watched program in Britain. So George single-handedly made Krishna consciousness a cultural phenomenon. practically around the globe overnight.
I'd like to tell a story about what happened at Abbey Road Studios after the recording. Like you say, Paul was in there, and he was doing the engineering. Well, Linda McCartney was also there, Paul's wife, and I had happened to go to high school with her. And it was in a very wealthy town called Scarsdale. So I said to her, you know, we went to high school together. And in high school, she had been much different. She was much of a snob. And she said, no, she was better. But she said, no, I can't believe that somebody from Scarsdale, a very rich place, would become a renounced monk. So I said, why not? Krishna owns Scarsdale too. And then she said, well, Paul's my God.
Yeah, I remember when she said that.
Yeah.
Paul is my God. So this changed the whole aspect of our yatra completely. By this time, though, let's see, now I'm jumping ahead a little bit because Berry Place.
Oh, yeah. No, we have, there is still one important note, which is that
wedding.
Thing about Royal Albert Hall. Like when, did I tell that?
Yeah.
When, intermixed with all, with this goings on with the Beatles, there were other events that also took place, some of them directly involving the Beatles and some of them indirectly. So we were still continuing our weekly program of chanting and distributing prasadam at the Ars Lab. And one time somebody came up and mentioned to us that John Lennon was going to put on a show at Royal Albert Hall, which is quite a, you know, upscale place where they would have big symphonies and other type of performances. And he asked if we could actually cook something to be given out for this project. So I thought about it and I said, yes, but we, you know, we only had little pots and pans. We'd never done a huge thing. And I said, we'll need pots and pans, you know, large enough. And they agreed to that if we did the cooking, they'd purchase big pots for us and pans. So that actually was the first big pots and pans we had when we eventually got Berry Place, our first real temple. This was the pots and pans we had. So myself, Jamuna Janaki, we proceeded to cook for this event. And then, of course, we all went. And what was the name of it?
Alchemical Wedding.
Yeah. So we come in, we arrive again. There we are with our pots and pans and all our prasadam in boxes. And what they did, though, they didn't have a formal sequence of events exactly put down. So we were waiting in the wings, and all the lights in the house went off, and there was just one spotlight out front. And the idea was that somebody, nobody was named, would start the show. And then, you know, Krishna, he's the supreme puppeteer, and he just did something that was very far out. He sent Janaki out, because Janaki was not a very aggressive personality. She was not one to be the first one at the helm, but she would be right there with you when someone else took up the wheel. But suddenly on that night, she went out in the spotlight and raised her hands and started chanting. And then we all kind of came out into the darkness, into the spotlight, and started chanting. And the entire hall, and this was a hall with balconies all around it, they started chanting, and we started dancing, and they started dancing. And the dancing is literally what brought down the house, because when the people started dancing, this was not a place meant for dancing. It was a concert hall. There were seats. So everybody was up and dancing. And then the security of the place freaked out, and they flipped on the lights, and they ordered everything to stop because it was illegal to dance in the concert hall. You know, I mean, we could dance on the stage, but the people couldn't dance. And they said if it didn't stop, the whole show would be over. But actually, that was, you know, really a wonderful success, that this entire huge thousands of people in this very elite setting heard the mantra chanted, and then afterwards they received Krishna's prasadam. And this was, again, it was connected to the Beatles because this happened through John and Yoko.
I'd like to embellish it a bit. The Arts Laboratory people, Jack Moore, said that they were also putting this on, and their whole idea was for it to be silence.
Right.
And I said, well, sometimes chanting Krishna conscious, chanting Krishna's name is silence. So do you still want to invite us? And they did, because we were part of the underground community. Mm-hmm. Now, John and Yoko at this point were wearing this canvas covering. It was like a canvas bubble. They were interviewed by this Dick Cavett on the show in this thing. They were wearing this, and John said, it's a Zen thing, so we could be there and not be there at the same time. And Ken Kesey had come, and it was filled with all these people in the audience. Our plan was that at the right indication, we would start chanting. We were waiting for the right thing. Now, John and Yoko were in this bubble, and previous to this, or maybe later, I'm not good at dates, they had asked myself and Jamuna to go in this canvas bubble and receive an award at the Tate Gallery.
On their behalf.
Yes, on their behalf. And because I was the president of London and trying to keep a modicum of decorum, stupid, but I let this person, Suri Das, who's Algerian French and small, but he's still my friend to this day. He has a heavy Algerian accent, and his wife was Jotila, who was taller than him, with an Irish accent. So they went in this bubble instead. And the reporter said, it was definitely John and Yoko in there. They thought Jotila was John, and Suri Das was Yoko. So our plan was, at the right time, we were going to descend in different ways, and somebody yelled out, strawberry fields forever. And then somebody yelled out, om. This was our indication. Then Janaki went, there was this line you weren't supposed to cross. And like Malati Prabhu said, Janaki wasn't very aggressive except with Prabhupada. And she stood right on the line. And we descended, and we stood on the line. Then suddenly a blues band got on the stage and started doing a 12 bars blue, and I went there and we did a 12 bar blues Hare Krishna mantra. The lights went on, you weren't supposed to dance, and I was still the photographer, and I was photographing this. This is a glorious event for Prabhupada. Well, then I had friends at Fleet Street where I'd go and develop the film. So after the event, I went to Fleet Street and developed the film, and they got this big magnifying glass about this big, and they were looking at the pictures, and they said, there it is. Apparently, a woman got so ecstatic she took off all her clothes and left her hat on. You really couldn't even tell it was a woman. It was like she was in the audience. So then they said, they called it the Mad Raven at Albert Hall. I had a press release, but then I wanted to distance ourselves from this. So they wrote an article, and I cut out the parts that weren't good, and I put, instead of Mad Raven, I just put Raven at Albert Hall. And there's a picture of us dancing and Jamuna on the front. And so Prabhupada thought it was great. The underground newspaper said, in their corporeal loveliness, in their vegetarian loveliness, they took the corporeal atmosphere and brought it into heaven. So this helped us, again, have some more inroads into the underground community.
Plus, you sold that photo to the Daily Mirror. It was their front page photo of all these guys in black tuxedos with a naked woman sitting in front of them, in the middle of them. So we had some more money for the...
Yeah, I flogged the photos whenever I could. Of the squatters, we'd go and feed the squatters, and I'd photograph them. And
Gurudas was always wandering around London taking pictures and selling them to the newspapers. Something always happened wherever you went. A fire. Remember that one picture you took of that fire coming out of that building, and it was on the front page? And that picture of that woman jumping out of that window...
Krishna provided. You know, okay, we need to sell another provoke.
Walking down the street, some woman jumps out of a window to commit suicide, and he gets a snap. Sells it to the newspaper.
That article we sent to Prabhupada, Krishna chant startles London. Do you have that? Prabhupada saw that article and he was so proud of us. He used to show it to all the people who... He sent it around all over the society. Is that it?
Yeah. I'll send this around. I'll first show it to Radhanath Maharaj and then you can pass it around, but I do want to get it back again at the end of the day, please. Pass it over to Marsh. And here's... I'll send a few things over. And this is...
make sure all these get back to Malati. These are precious.
I mean, they're just copies.
She's
very the only ones I have.
Kind to distribute these.
I have a letter from Prabhupada. It's March 1970. Is it too early to read it?
Yes, wait, 68. We haven't hit 69 yet.
And we're running out of time. So all of these events were happening in such rapid succession, one after another. Almost every day was a huge explosion of publicity and excitement about Krishna consciousness arriving in the British Isles. Especially after the record was released, we became rock stars. We became show business personalities along with everything else. And the nice part about it was that we got to preach whenever we had an audience, like a concert or on television. We would always have a chance to preach Krishna consciousness. So people understood who we were on a real basis. They knew that we represented a philosophy. And this is what began to happen so rapidly and so fast that we even had to hire an agent. We had to hire a booking agent to
Red Door.
What was it? Red Door Agency. We began giving concerts all over, not only Britain, but all over Europe. And they paid us huge sums of money to do this, to appear with groups like Deep Purple and other famous rock and roll groups on stage and chant Hare Krishna and pass out prasadam and pass out leaflets about Krishna.
Yeah, we had a little format, though. Because... You know, the fame was there, we have to say, because George introduced us. So because of George's name, we were writing on a little a little buffer there. And just like rock groups, they have names. Like he's mentioned, you probably don't know these names. You know, Moby Grape or Fleetwood Mac or Grateful Dead. These are the names of rock groups. So we were being billed as the Radha Krishna Temple, which was what we were. But these people at first would see it as a name of a band because we had this hit record. So when we would arrive on the scene, they were expecting another flamboyant group of people. But instead they got us, which, you know, I mean, of course, 40 years younger, but, you know, dressed about the same with the tilak. I had a kid in my hand.
How much more flamboyant can you get?
And, you know, it became quickly apparent that this name, Radha Krishna Temple, was really what we were. And then we'd start every show with, we'd get a big box of flowers from a wholesaler. And we'd pass out flowers and incense to the people, at least in the immediate surrounding. And Mukunda would go out and deliver a little, not a speech, but he would say a few words about the chanting. So suddenly they became aware that this just wasn't a rock song, that this was actually something very significant. And the audience was, by and large, always receptive, always ready to take part in the chanting, and very enthusiastically so, in fact. And then, you know, the case where we got shut down in Royal Albert Hall repeated itself in several places, because once people, you know, each large building has its rules and regulations, and in Amsterdam we went to one place, the people were so enthusiastic to dance that they put the lights off instead of putting the lights on, and saying if they continue dancing then we all have to leave. But this was this reciprocation between our audience and ourselves, who they suddenly saw this was not rock stars, these were real people, the Radha Krishna Temple. They began to relate to us as devotees of something very real instead of, you know, a fleeting rock star phenomena.
And we would say we are not a pop group. We would actually announce that, and we would leave a few spaces in our van, and devotees would come back with us. But there was one place, Plimpton, and Derek Taylor made a whole little, like, no, they made a pandal, and there was one area where they had merchants selling things, booths. So that was the first place we started to chant. And people would surround us and listen to the chant and not go to the merchant next to us. So the first merchant said, would you please accept this donation to chant someplace else? So we did, and went to the next merchant, and he would say, nobody's coming here. Would you please accept this donation to chant? So we went around the whole pondal, and it was quite successful. Now, the top of the pops, there was only two, ITV and BBT, two television channels, telechannels at the time, and Top of the Pops was one of the most famous and watched programs in Great Britain. Even old people watched this program because there was only two channels to watch. And at the same time as the Top of the Pops was, you know, some other boring program, so they would watch it. So I think this was the second time we were on, but we had brought slides of Krishna, and we were prepared, and we were quite a few devotees at this time, and so we were preparing to sing. And one of the things they do at these concerts is put women in these little cages to dance, like to gyrate.
Oh, go-go dancing.
Yeah, go-go dancing. So we started to chant, and suddenly these women are there, like, so...
Mini skirts,
yeah, and boots. And we said, no, this just won't do. And he said, well, but they're paid, they're like union, they have to dance. So Chaitra Guru in my heart said, go find some cloth for them, and we'll teach them how to make saris, and we will teach you the Swami step, the trance dance. Like Prabhupada danced side. Well, these women loved it. They didn't have to work so hard, and they just... actually, I forgot to say, when I said it won't do, he said, no, but they have to. So I said, it was a live program, it wasn't taped. So I said, no, it won't do. And I was the president. I said, let's go. And so everybody started packing up their instruments and leaving. And it was a live program. So I said, what are you going to do with 3.5 minutes of dead time? So then I said, get some cloth and put these women in saris, And so they loved it, and we showed the slides, and it became very successful, Top of the Pops.
But there's still so much to cover. You know, we have Barry Place and John Lennon's house, Prabhupada coming. What's the time situation looking like? We've already started. I don't know. Everyone must be getting bored.
Should I read this letter from Prabhupada?
Read the letter from Prabhupada. All this time, we're building all of this up so that when Prabhupada comes, when he finally comes, and all this time he's writing to us. He's heard about the record. People are telling him, "My God, those devotees in London are doing something incredible. They're spreading Krishna consciousness all over Europe." And Prabhupada would write, I'm coming. And we'd write back, "No, please don't come yet, Prabhupada. Things are not ready yet for you." So this kind of competition was developing also between the London devotees and the devotees in America. Because they, compared to what we were doing, they were doing very little. They just had, you know, this great envy of these devotees in London. So many devotees from America started coming over to be part of this incredible energy that was developing.
Actually, they thought we were in Maya. Because
some did.
They were like talking about us like, no, but they went over to England, they forgot all about Krishna, they're running around with the Beatles making records.
But Prabhupada knew. Prabhupada was so proud of us. He thought it was something very great. In fact,
he would ask how many records were being sold, just like he would ask about his books. So what is the report? And he wanted to know how many records were being sold.
But our record, our single, was the fastest-selling single of Apple history, even more than the Beatles. I have an article that says that. Fastest-selling single, Hare Krishna Mantra.
About the time that we made the record, by accident again, Krishna interfering in things by Krishna's arrangement, Gurudas was in a bank one day in downtown London, and this fellow came up and asked him, maybe you tell the story, how you met the real estate agent?
He used to be
Jones, Mr. Jones.
He used to be our tenant.
Brian Jones. He was our,
When we lived in San Francisco, Shamsundar and I actually managed, in order to have our rent for free, we managed the apartment building. And in turn for managing the building, we were given a free apartment. So one of the tenants was an Englishman who had returned to England before we even left. And this is the person that Gurudas met in the bank. And they got to talking, and he asked him about us, you know, because he knew myself and Shamsundar. And then, of course, the story got around, you know, that we were looking for a building.
And then I think I brought him.
He said, "We're looking for a building, and we were having a very difficult time." Part of the difficulty was, in order to secure a building, you needed a large sum of money for a down payment, and we barely had enough money to get on the subway every day. So when Gurudas mentioned that, "Well, we're looking for a large building to use," he said, "Well, I think I may be able to help you." It turned out he was into real estate. And this is how Barry Place was secured. So originally Barry Place had been the headquarters for a Bible society that sent Bibles out in different languages. So all the Bibles of all the different languages were stored in this building. And they had lost their lease, or there wasn't a lease, whatever, they had to vacate.
There was some litigation. It was caught between owners. Nobody really knew who it belonged to.
Yeah.
We agreed on £35 a week rent for a seven-story building just off Oxford Street in the very center of London.
One block down from the British Museum.
And we needed it because now there was more devotees.
Well, we paid it into an escrow account, because nobody knew who the money should go to. It was a completely Krishna's arrangement again. It was an ownerless building.
But we still needed some kind of guarantee, and I think George gave that guarantee.
Right. Yeah. Because then the then they threw the objection in the rubbish bin. Did we see the morgue before that?
Yeah. Yeah. We were looking at anything, including we went to a morgue one time. That was, to be honest, it was really ghastly. It was, you know, externally it looked really beautiful. Like, if you don't know, a morgue is where you prepare dead bodies for the grave. And externally it was really very beautiful. And inside there was all this marble, but they were like these big marble tables that were slightly tilted with a drain in them, so you can imagine what that was about. And, you know, it was heavily tamasic, so Krishna prevented us from getting that situation, although we definitely considered it. Interestingly enough, in San Francisco, they actually did acquire a former morgue and turned it into a temple at one point after our departure.
But the to make a long story short, we finally got a premises, finally got a building. But Prabhupada says, I will come immediately. We said, no, you have to wait, Prabhupada, while we build this temple and make it nice for you.
Because we weren't allowed to live there.
Yeah, but don't forget.
So we had to. So at this time, we had to start vacate Betterton Street.
Right.
Guru Das got the word from Nigel Samuel that we had to leave Betterton Street.
There were so many devotees.
So I mentioned this to George one day. I happened to see him. I think it was out at Twickenham Studios, someplace like that. I mentioned to him that we had to leave Betterton Street. We had no place to live. And John was standing there, and he says, well, you know, I just got a new place out in Surrey, I think, was the Buckinghamshire, Tittenhurst estate. He had just purchased this huge estate, the Cadbury Chocolate Estate. And he had many modifications in mind, and he asked if we knew how to do carpentry work. And I said, yeah, we can do anything. He said, well, then you devotees should come out and live with me. So he invited us to come out and live there while Berry Place Temple was being constructed. And going back to what we were saying earlier, we wanted to create something very exceptional in this temple in London, in downtown London, so that many important people could come there and feel that they were in a magnificent place, that the philosophy fit the woodwork. So we began to gut the whole interior of this building on Berry Place, tear it out. We tore out two floors so that the temple room would be very much enlarged. So we swallowed more than we could chew in this respect, and it was going to take several months to really make this temple a fit place for Prabhupada to come and stay.
And you and Kirtipada were basically the only ones that were working.
There was really only two of us, but without any permits or any permission whatsoever, we began to do this work. Without any money, also, at least initially. We tore out the interior of this building and began to, finally the redwood had a home. We began to put the wood in. We had to build the walls very thick because of the sound, to dampen the sound, because there were residences next to us. And the walls had to be soundproofed. Finally, one day, two men came in the building. Mr. Savage and Mr. Black, and they were from the building inspection committee, the council building inspectors. They said, what are you doing here? Can we see your permits? Oh, we don't have any permits, sir. Oh, nobody had ever done anything like this to them before. And Mr. Savage and Mr. Black were their names. And it sounded like they were going to close us down and that was going to be it. But Guru Das being very diplomatic and Mukunda being very diplomatic, and we started talking to Mr. Savage and Mr. Black, and we kind of got them on our side. And we said, well, what's the bare minimum we can do to make this legal, this whole temple legal? And they finally talked a while, and they said, well, if you just put two steel beams there in the ceiling, that should be sufficient. they didn't want to deal with it. It was a problem way bigger than they were used to dealing with. So we didn't have the money for these steel beams, and we had to have them up before we could do anything further. And meanwhile, Prabhupada's pressuring us. This is what I remember most, is Prabhupada pressuring us because he wants to come so fast, come over so badly. So I ran down the street with Jai Hari to the Rolling Stones office, and Mick Jagger was there, and I asked him if he could contribute £100 to buy these two beams, and he quickly gave it. So we had the beams for our temple.
And we had this introductory letter from Allen Ginsberg to this person named Tom Dreeberg, who was a member of Parliament. And so we were trying to meet him, and we couldn't meet him because he was a member of the House of Commons. And then we heard that Mr. Dreeberg was in the hospital for an eye operation. So we, of course, crashed the hospital room. And I remember Jamuna going up and shaking his hand and saying, "Mr. Dreeberg, we've been trying to meet you for so long." And this man was shaking like this. And then we hear across the room, "I'm Mr. Dreeberg." So then we all went to that bed. "Mr. Dreeberg, we've been wanting to meet you." Because of the eye operation, we read him the introductory letter from Allen Ginsberg, and then we left a lot of tapes. He was a captive audience. He couldn't go anywhere, so we left our Krishna conscious tapes. Then he wrote a letter on our behalf about the buried place building. These people are known to me, etc., on the House of Commons stationery. Sometimes, though, we met him one night in Piccadilly Circus, and he was completely drunk, and we were asking for donations, and I remember he emptied out his pockets, his pounds and coins all over, and then he passed out. We had to take him home in the Krishna van. We took him home in the Krishna van. He lived in the church, and he ended up being a double agent for the KGB and the CID.
Yeah, he was Kim Philby's, the third man, they called him.
The third man in this whole spy drama, but he was very nice. So should we read him?
Actually, during this time, we were also meeting other people, other types of people. I mean, the focus, as Shamsundar has mentioned, was on getting the mission established and spreading Krishna consciousness. So meeting the Beatles was a very big accomplishment, but it wasn't the only one, and they weren't the only people that were helping us in this endeavor. We were still liaisoning with the Indian community. And somewhere along the line, this lady from Vrindavan showed up, and she was kind of a small statured lady, and she wore white saris, and she chanted Hare Krishna. And we became a little captivated by her. And she carried with her a small brass Radha and Krishna deities, and particularly Jamuna was very, you know, Jamuna was naturally piously inclined towards deity worship. So she was attracted by that. And I was a little skeptical about the lady. So I wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and he wrote back to me. He said, "Please accept my blessings." Oh, by the way, this lady's name, her name was Shama Mataji, but they just would call her Mataji. And we weren't used to that. Mataji, we didn't know that. You know, this whole Mataji phenomena in ISKCON is fairly recent. So when we first heard the name Mataji, we thought Mataji was her name. We didn't know that it was a form of address, actually. I said, "Please accept my blessings. I am in due receipt of your letter, undated." So that's kind of significant, because Prabhupada was very precise about things like dates and time. So the fact that I hadn't put my date on the letter, one time he said, "A man who does not know the date is like a man without intelligence." So anyway, I'm in due receipt of your letter, undated. And I was very pleased to note the contents. Regarding the Radha Sham chanting, which you have heard, it is not very good. So she was chanting like this: Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Sham, Hare Krishna, Hare Sham. So this was how she chanted. And we hadn't heard this before, so I wrote to Prabhupada. He said, regarding the Hare Sham chanting, which you have heard, it is not very good. In our temple, strictly Hare Krishna chanting should be given more importance. There is no harm in this mantra, you have heard, but it is not very important. So like I mentioned earlier, Prabhupada was constantly protecting us within and without, protecting us and protecting ISKCON. There are many such common songs composed by common devotees out of sentiment, but our principle is to stick to the authorities and always remember that Hare Krishna is the prime authorized mantra. Then he mentions, I'm very much encouraged to learn that you are bold enough to challenge any non-devotee as you did with that impersonalist yoga student. That should be the temperament of all our preachers. We should not be aggressive, but we should not tolerate any sort of nonsense. One who says that God is not merciful because he has made one person happy and one distressed is most nonsensical. This very statement affirms that man is a godless rascal. All of those so-called yogis are therefore rascals because they have no actual realization of God. Falsely, they think themselves as God, and their association should be avoided as far as possible. So, again, we're meeting more and more types of people. And because in our preaching, we didn't have any books or literature to give them. It was just us with whatever we had retained and remembered from what we had heard in our 1 year and 9 months association with Srila Prabhupada. And, at least for myself, it never occurred to me that I knew far less than most of these people I was speaking to. I had no concept of a learned pundit. Therefore, I had no hesitation to go up and present Krishna consciousness as I had learned it from Srila Prabhupada to anyone. And sometimes these people would be very challenging because they were actually so-called learned pundits, and at least say, they would say, yes, we know Bhagavad Gita, I've memorized it when I was 5 years old, and but somehow it just didn't impress us. And then they would try to impress upon us that maybe they were God, and many different types are, in this case, God has no mercy. How can you say God is merciful because one person is suffering, the other person isn't suffering? But we weren't afraid to stand up to these people because we had such faith and conviction in Srila Prabhupada and the teachings he had handed to us that we simply repeated what he had said in every instant. And this made Prabhupada happy. And at the same time, he was cautioning us we should avoid this type of association as far as possible. Then he comes back again to this lady. Regarding this Shyama Mataji Dasi from Vrindavan, does she sing Hare Krishna mantra or not? If she chants Hare Krishna, it is all right. And if she does not chant Hare Krishna mantra, you should ask her why she does not do so. I am not familiar with her spiritual master, Gaurangi Das. But if he has taught her to sing this Radha Shyam song, then he is also not authorized. Then, in his own writing, he put a little arrow, and he said, "If he has taught her to sing this Radha Shyam song in place of the Hare Krishna mantra, then he is also not authorized." So, again, he's giving us very clear, strict instruction, protecting us from, because we were definitely influenced, One other thing that had happened as a result of that influence, because we saw her wearing these white saris, so we thought, the real devotees of Krishna must just wear white saris. And Prabhupada was coming for his first visit. We were at Lenin's estate. So Jamuna and Janaki had this idea, we should also wear white saris, and this would really please Prabhupada to see we're becoming better devotees of Krishna. So we got white, just white cloth. And actually, because I had a kid, white was really impractical. I couldn't see myself in white because, kids just are messy. So I got a beige color. But they had white. And we met Prabhupada at the airport, and he looked at us, he was just kind of looking at us really strangely. And he said, why are you wearing like this?
With the yellow dhotis. With the yellow dhotis.
No, but he said, you should not wear white in the presence of your husbands. Because we didn't understand that this woman was a widow, and this wearing white was only what widows did. So he said, you should not wear white so long as your in the presence of your husband. So long as your husband is alive, you should not wear white. So he said, there must be border. So as soon as we got back, I had this person take me to town, and I bought some ribbon, and I can't stand to sew. If I'm sewing, it's like a miracle. But I was sitting there sewing this ribbon on the bottom of my sari. I didn't even take the sari off. I was sewing it on because so that the next minute I saw Prabhupada, which would be very shortly that day, I would at least I'd have this border on my sari. So, you know, Prabhupada was always looking out for us and able to catch even the slightest discrepancy in our behavior, which would take us away from his pure teachings.
As long as we're speaking of Mataji, I'd just like to say that once a brahmachari said, how should we treat women? And Prabhupada said, like your mother. And so then he said, well, how should women treat men? And Prabhupada said, like their son. So this Mataji had deities that the customs house impounded. They wouldn't let her have her deities. And so she asked me, can I help her? And I went to the customs house, and they thought she was importing antiques to resell. And I said, no, this is just like you're representing the government. This is representing God for this person. So they let those deities out. And she swooned. So this letter is only about a couple weeks after.
The letter that I wrote?
This is later. I think we should kind of go back to the chronology and prepare, because we're living at John Lennon's, and we can't put Prabhupada off any longer.
Right.
He calls and he says, I am coming. No matter what, even though the temple is just been gutted. There's hardly any progress on the temple yet. We still didn't have our temple. We did have accommodations at John Lennon's. We had just moved in a week or two before, and Prabhupada said, I am coming. So quickly we had to prepare. And finally, after 1 year, Prabhupada was coming. This was the most dearest time of our time in London to prepare for Prabhupada's arrival.
This letter's before his
arrival. Oh, you said 1970.
Well, I don't know. I'm not
this is 1969 still.
This is from Los Angeles to us, how he was missing us and stuff.
After he went away then the second time. So August 1969. Malati has a suggestion, Radhana, that we to have our prasadam now, intermission, and start up with Prabhupada arriving in London. Does that sound... Pardon? After prasadam? Or is everyone too bored and tired? That sounds like a plan.
That's a plan, Sam.
He
was called by Jimmy Doty's brother, a man from a Cockney background, who couldn't pronounce the Sanskrit words, Sammy Shoe.
Sammy Shoe. So we're living at John Lennon's house. The record is out. We've become Krishna consciousness has become famous in England, British Isles, and all over the British Isles. And Prabhupada no longer is going to be put off. He's coming. So we'll leave it at that and have prasadam. Hare Bol. Prabhupada is about to come. First, we had our first inaugural. This is one point we should probably go back a few weeks before he arrives, and describe the first London Rath Yatra. This Rath Yatra was kind of a spur of the moment thing. We decided to have the first London Rath Yatra. And at that time, in the spring of 69, the six of us and all the other brahmacharis and new devotees in London were between homes. We lived in different apartments and houses throughout the suburban area of London. And it was my job to build the Rath cart at my house in Balham, which was probably 20 to 30 miles from downtown London. The route of the first Rath Yatra in London was to go from Marble Arch, just by Hyde Park, down to Trafalgar Square, right in the center of London. Prabhupada was very happy that we were taking... These names were very familiar to Prabhupada, although he hadn't seen these places yet. He had always heard of Hyde Park, Marble Arch, Piccadilly Circus, Trafalgar Square. So he was very happy in his letters that we had a Rath Yatra plan to take us through these places and take Lord Jagannath through the streets of London. So at my house out in the suburbs, I began to construct the first Rath Yatra car. And it was done without very much money, and I had very little help, just one other boy sometimes helping. And I wanted to build the original type of cart with the wooden wheels. So over a period of weeks and months, I built this huge car, stretching much higher than this ceiling, and with wheels 2 meters in diameter, big wooden wheels. The morning of the Rath Yatra, Mukunda and Gurudas came over to my house. We had to somehow get this cart. It had never moved. We had to get this cart from my yard, very narrow yard, all the way to Marble Arch, a distance of about at least 20 miles. Three of us. It was June. It was light early, so they came over at dawn. It must have been about 4 in the morning. There was no traffic in the streets. And with my little truck, I was pulling, and those two guys were kind of, I had built a steering mechanism for the front axle out of a swivel of some kind I tore out of an old automobile. So the two front wheels moved very slightly one way or the other with a lot of pushing. So Mukunda and Gurudas would push on one wheel when we had to go around a corner, and I was pulling with the truck. So hour after hour, we pushed this cart through the streets of suburban London down towards Chelsea. And every time we hit a bump, it just shook a little bit more and shook a little bit more. And one more bolt would come loose, and then one more bolt would come loose. Finally, it was a miracle in itself. We arrived at Marble Arch just before we were scheduled for the march, and thousands of people appeared. Mostly from the Indian community and quite a few London people, English people. This was a Sunday morning. So we got the Jagannath up on the cart, and everyone was throwing flowers, and the festivities began, and off the cart went. You know, and it went about 100 feet, and one wheel fell off.
And the whole cart came crashing down. So the police, here we were in the middle of Marble Arch where every major artery in London meets. So the traffic started backing up and back. And it was not an easy thing to disassemble this cart. The police said we had to take it down. We couldn't move it. They asked us, why don't you move this? And we can't move it. It's too big. It wouldn't budge. So little by little, we had to dismantle the whole thing. It took all morning. Meanwhile, it was in the paper the next day, the largest traffic jam in London history. It backed traffic up all over London. So the first Ratha Yatra was not a... I guess it was a major success in some ways. It really got us a lot of good publicity.
And one devotee, because I was told that somebody has just woken up for the morning and saw the spectacle of us pushing and pulling this, and it was so outrageous that he wanted to join this kind of thing.
I talked with him, too. He said he looked out, and he saw this big car coming down the street and all this steam coming out behind it. And it was you and Mukunda sweating so much, the steam was coming off of you. About the Ratha Yatra? I'm done.
I have one more about this Ratha Yatra.
Okay.
So I was distraught a little, and I wrote Prabhupada. Usually, like Malati Prabhu pointed out, that you say a date. I didn't date it, and I actually thought that the card had collapsed because of my poor devotion. So I asked Prabhupada, did the car collapse because of my poor devotion? And Prabhupada wrote back, I have read your undated, unfinished letter. And the car collapsed not to your poor devotion, but to poor engineering.
Shamsundar mentioned how it was at that point in time we were scattered all over. And I mean, indeed we were sometimes, in England it's divided by boroughs. We'd be boroughs apart. We wouldn't even be in the same borough. And at that time, this was in 69, I had written a letter to Srila Prabhupada. And part of the letter was to me, typed. And the second part was a handwritten note to Shamsundar, which I'll read. My dear Malati, please accept my blessings. I am in due receipt of your letter, dated April 24th, 1969, along with the silver foils. He was in Massachusetts at the time, and at an Indian shop in London, I had found some of the silver paper that you put on top of the sweet, so I had sent it. I think this is imported for India, and it's used to cover sweetmeats for making them beautiful. In my last letter addressed to you, I sent one letter to Mataji, meaning that lady that we talked about earlier, in Hindi. Did you deliver it to her? I have received no reply as of yet. I am sorry to learn that you are all now scattered apart. Immediately, you must find out some way to live together and continue Sankirtan party. If you live divided, then our mission will be spoiled. Inform Shamsundar that if the letter of guarantee given by George Harrison is not sufficient for the authorities of the mortuary building, this is when we were thinking about getting that place, I am prepared to give my own bank guarantee. But we must secure the building immediately. If this is not possible, ask Mataji to give us some place so that you six can live together. Or else you must find a place for all of you immediately. Living scattered is hopelessness. I am very much anxious to hear from you about this. Please offer my blessings to Shamsundar and Saraswati Dasi. I hope this meets you all in good health. And then, here's in the... Here we go. Here we have this other part. No. Okay, here we go. My dear Shamsunder, this is in handwritten. Please accept my blessings. As stated in your last letter, I have postponed my journey to Hawaii. I think the beetles are gradually passing away. Let us therefore take the risk of realizing a nice place on our own risk. So he was, at this point, we're discussing getting a building, he was. Krishna will help us. I think you should occupy immediately the 5-story house described by Mukunda. I shall be glad to hear from you. I think you may introduce the Rath Yatra ceremony in London also for this year, 1969.
Oh, okay.
That was Prabhupada's direct instructions that you perform that Rath Yatra ceremony.
What date is
that? This was in January 28th, 1969.
What?
January 28th, 1969.
Prabhupada, okay. All right, but John Lennon solved the problem. We all moved out to his place. And we prepared, after Rath Yatra, we started preparing for Prabhupada's arrival. We secured the building. We're working on the building, very place, living out at John Lennon's, and organizing. What date did Prabhupada arrive? End of August, I believe, 1969. So, do you remember the arrival, Prabhupada's arrival in London? Let me see. Speak something about it.
I remember he got in the car and nobody gave him the driver's address. You know, we were all just like standing at the airport and the car took off and Prabhupada. That was the start.
You could tell everybody.
You can tell us.
Well, the main thing I remember is some reporters were there, and we were in the VIP, very important person's room, and Prabhupada said, they said, why are you here? And he said, I've come to teach you what you have forgotten, love of God. That's what I remember about that.
John Lennon gave us his Rolls Royce to pick Prabhupada up in. And we had our other cars lined up behind the Rolls. And when Prabhupada came out, we were so happy to see him and so flustered by the whole occasion that we ushered him into the Rolls, and the Rolls took off. And then we suddenly realized, well, does the driver know where he's supposed to take him?
Not only that, there was all of the devotees were present at the airport, which means even the driver knew where to go, which he probably did. When he would get there, there would be no one there because everybody was still at the airport and our cars weren't quite as, you know, swift as the Rolls Royce because most of us came on the underground. So all the devotees were standing there and kind of a stunned, oh no, what do we do now? And Prabhupada, in the meanwhile, just disappeared. He was there in front of us and now he was gone again.
So we came back to John's place near Ascot. John had purchased a new estate, a big estate, and the old on this great gentleman's estate. At one point, he had an art gallery or an auditorium-like thing where he displayed his art collection. So John gave us that to make into a temple. So the devotees had been busy fixing that place up for a temple. Just behind that were the old servants' quarters. They were two or three-story brick, old Victorian brick homes, apartments that were formerly the servants' quarters, and that was where the devotees lived, and we fixed up a place there for Prabhupada to live.
Some of these quarters had formerly been stables, horse stables that were converted into living quarters, actually.
So Prabhupada's first impulse was we drove all the way out to the countryside. It was beautiful, but it was still the countryside. And Prabhupada, we all went up to his room and we're greeting him, talking. And then George John and Yoko came for that very famous conversation. This was the first time that they had met each other, that George had met Prabhupada. You've probably all read the conversation. After that, Prabhupada said, but I want to see London. So next morning we made arrangements to take him to London to show him the city that he had always heard about since childhood but had never seen. And I remember mostly that he was very disappointed as we drove around and said, this is the River Thames. He looked as we drove over the River Thames and said, but it is only a small canal.